Welcome to After Cana, a Ferris Love podcast dedicated to exploring the vocation of marriage. In each episode, we bring you stories, advice, and insights from experts and seasoned couples to help guide you in your journey, whether you're dating, engaged, or newly married. On today's episode, I will interview Rachel Hoover Canto, the author of Pretty Good Catholic: How to Find, Date, and Marry Someone Who Shares Your Faith.
Hi, Rachel. It's really nice to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
For sure. I'm super excited to talk about this. For our listeners, I met Rachel at a Young Catholic Professionals conference a few years back, and she was promoting her book, Pretty Good Catholic, which is what we're going to be talking about a lot today. I saw how many people were interested in the book at that conference, and then reading reviews online and just seeing the impact of the book. I think anyone who hasn't read it should definitely check it out and listen to the full conversation to hear more. But Rachel's doing big things. I think this book was really, really helpful for a lot of people. So yeah, I'm just really excited to dive into it. And see Rachel again after meeting her a few years ago. So Rachel, tell me a little bit about the process behind Pretty Good Catholic, what inspired you to write this book, and just tell us a little bit about you in general.
So I came from actually convert parents, but I grew up Catholic since I was four, so kind of all in that Catholic bubble and seeing lots of people who were getting married pretty young, having big families. That looked great to me. I wanted to do the same, and just growing up assumed that would be pretty simple. I just thought everybody meets their spouse in college or something, and it just happens. And then I got to college, and college came and went, and I was still single. And then more and more of my 20s were going by, and I was still single. And it seemed as if it just got harder and harder to meet people and actually go on dates and even get those relationships started. And then when I did have relationships, it was really hard to navigate them and to understand what to do as far as just how do you really discern marriage? What does that even look like? And the whole chastity question, you know, I mean, you know, the basics, like everybody's been told like save sex for marriage. And then you're not really told like, okay, but what is okay? What's healthy? What's good, you know, in that area? And so I was kind of figuring a lot of things out by trial and error for a long time. And then as I was getting closer to 30 and just feeling like this has taken a lot longer than I thought, I was working as a technical writer and a freelance journalist, kind of doing a lot of different types of writing, and decided I would just kind of tackle this issue in words, which is the only way I really knew how to deal with it. So I was writing some articles just exploring all the different hurdles that, you know, I and my friends and my siblings and everybody kind of in my age group were running into as devout Catholics who wanted to do things right, but were trying to find spouses and it just wasn't working. Because a lot of people, I think in older generations or already married, sort of tended to oversimplify the problem. They would say things like, well, it's just because young people don't want the commitment of marriage and children, or everybody's just getting secularized and they're just shacking up and not getting married. I was like, well, I'm sure that's true for a lot of people, but not all of us, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of other issues that nobody is really addressing. So I started writing some articles on that topic, and then Vianney Vocations came to me and said, hey, we have all these books on discerning priesthood and religious life. We need one on discerning marriage as well. Would you like to dive into that in book form? Yeah, I always wanted to write a book. I thought it would be, you know, a great novel or something. I didn't know it would be this. But I was so passionate about it, and I essentially set out to write the book that I wish I would have read when I was maybe 17 or 18, just kind of starting on that journey of like really discerning my vocation, trying to date, et cetera. So I interviewed psychologists and matchmakers and married couples who have actually achieved the goal, right? And just tried to pull together all the best advice I could find and my own experience and kind of tell my own story, put it all together in one place and make it just a good, very practical, very easy to read guide for, you know, the do's and don'ts of how to actually discern and date these days. Just kind of fill the gaps of those areas where I was seeing, you know, the existing resources just didn't necessarily help me. And so I think there's gaps for other people as well.
Right, right. That's so good. Yeah. Wow. That's a really amazing start to the journey. And I love how in the subtitle of the book, it's, you know, how to, well, first of all, how to find people that you would consider marrying. I think at least just what I've heard from my friends and just the people around me, they know that there are good people out there, but finding them is such a challenge. And then saying yes to those people when, you know, approached, basically. So I want to talk about that idea that you mentioned in the book, defaulting to yes. So being really open to dating and discerning through dating. What does that mean? Tell the Catholic singles out there what they should be doing in regards to saying yes when they're asked out.
Yeah. So I say default to yes, because I think oftentimes there's an attitude of thinking, you know, I have my type, I kind of know what I'm looking for, I have standards. And if someone comes my way who doesn't seem to fit that, and they seem interested in me, or vice versa, to just sort of shut it down, either with body language or with words, before anything gets started. And instead, I encourage defaulting to saying yes. That doesn't mean you absolutely say yes to everyone. Sometimes there's a really good reason to say no, but you should have a good reason. You should have a definite good reason to say no if you're saying no to a first date in particular. Because a first date, the first several dates really, should just be getting to know someone a little bit more to see if there's enough there to just take it one step further and one step further and just proceeding gradually forward. It's not all or nothing. It's not, we're basically strangers and now we're super seriously considering spending the rest of our lives together, right? There's sort of a stage in between that needs to be recovered. And I definitely was a default to no kind of person for a while. I was just very cautious, and I had my husband list, you know, all the criteria that I thought
we
I wanted.
We all do.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's encouraged even among Christian girls, like, oh, okay, write down what you're looking for because you want to have standards. And we can get into standards versus preferences later. But I think it was a huge dose of humility for me when, well, I tell the whole story in the book, but just to keep it simple, when I first met my husband, I completely shut him down. He hadn't even asked me out yet, but I was just completely like, oh, this guy is not my type. Why is he talking to me? And just kind of pushed him away. Oh, yeah. I thought I was being kind of neutral and polite, but he says I was sending very, very closed off signals. It was like I just like rolled up the car window, you know, and didn't want anything to do with him. Yeah. And then a few months later, we re-met and had a few more conversations just casually. And finally, I did give him a chance through a speed dating event we participated in, which I can share more. But anyway, I decided to just default to yes with anybody at that speed dating event, unless I had a super like concrete reason not to. So he was one of them. I was kind of like, okay, sure, there's no reason not to. And then our first date was really good. And the first few dates continued to be really good, and now we're married. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. He was a different type than I expected, but at the same time, he did hit all the really important criteria that I had. But I had to give him a chance first and get to know him a little bit in order to see that. So that's what I encourage. Just default to saying yes. If you're thinking, maybe there's no real reason why this definitely wouldn't work, this person doesn't seem creepy or dangerous or anything like that, then Just give it a shot. Give it one day, maybe two or three, and just see how things go.
Yeah. No, I'm 100% with you. And I think the danger in like the Catholic community or small Catholic colleges, I went to the University of Dallas, so very small. Word gets around fast. There's a lot of pressure put on a first date, just because the minute someone expresses interest in another person, everybody in the community seems to know about it. And I would just really encourage people to just let each other date and get to know one another. It's not necessarily going to mean marriage, but sometimes it can. I think taking away that pressure would be very beneficial, and just really seeing, like you said, the first few dates as we're getting to know each other, we're taking it slow. And again, even if the date doesn't work out or even if that person doesn't work out, you're learning something by dating. You're gaining good experience. You might gain a couple of funny stories from some silly first dates. I remember when I was in college before I had met my now husband, I was in one of my classes. I walked to the bathroom. When I was walking back to class, this random guy who I had seen before but had never talked to, he goes, "Hey, you're Gabby, right?" I was like, "Yeah." And he just went for it and asked me on a date. And I was almost too shocked to say no, but I said yes, and it didn't work out with him, but it was a very nice date. He was a very nice guy. And I was glad that I said yes anyway, even though it was like probably not going to work. It was just one of those things where he had the courage to ask me out, and that takes a lot. And I think as women, we can use our standards as kind of like a shield and not think about how much the man usually is putting themselves out there when they're asking you out on a date. So
absolutely.
You said, if there is a really good reason, if you're unsettled by the person, do not go on a date with them, obviously. But if they're just a guy that you don't know much about that you think might be nice, go for it.
Yeah, usually that's a really good point. Usually I think women do need a little more encouragement that,
right.
Yes, but I think men too. I find that a lot of Catholic guys are afraid of asking a woman out too quickly, because then if it doesn't work out, then everyone knows, like you said, that he went out with her. So he feels like he can't ask out anybody else in the same young adult community or whatever. And so sometimes they're doing their research for a really long time. And it does take a lot of courage. It can be really hard. You have to kind of read the room. But I do think it would be beneficial for more men to just kind of go for it, even if she's just walking down the hall and you've never really talked to her before. If you're drawn to her, you can just go on one really simple little date.
Yeah.
Try to keep it quiet. You don't have to tell anybody that you went on a date. And you could even say, like, let's keep this to ourselves. Let's keep it kind of private in the young adult community right now. Not because we're being secretive and weird, but just to like keep the pressure off.
Yeah,
and then,
absolutely.
Yeah. And then you can do the same if you're also kind of interested in someone else. It doesn't have to be immediately really exclusive and serious. It can just be coffee with one person, coffee with another person, and then think about it, see if you want to pursue further with either one.
Yeah. 100%. Oh my gosh. Completely agree. Okay. So speaking of these standards that we have been kind of talking about a little bit. So if someone's really in that box of like, I need the person to check all the boxes before I go on a first date, what is a way that they can kind of shift their mindset, open their mind and heart, without necessarily lowering the very important standards that we all should have as Catholics?
Yes. Yeah. That's how I phrase in the book, open your mind without lowering your standards, because there's a difference. We have to think about standards versus preferences. Those are two different things. So standards are the really important non-negotiables that everyone should have. So I was interviewing a matchmaker for this book, and she said basically there are three things that they have seen are necessary for any relationship to really work long term. One would be, do you even want to get married? Is that a major goal for you? Which hopefully for all Catholics, they're not just dating around for no reason. Hopefully marriage is the goal, But you never know. You got to double check on someone's discernment status, so to speak. Are they still considering priesthood or religious life? Like, are you pretty sure you want to get married, And then children, if one person really wants kids, the other one really doesn't, you're never going to be able to like go halfway on that and compromise, Again, as Catholics, we should be open to life if we're getting married, but that's still something you got to kind of check in on. Are you religiously compatible? Maybe you're both Catholic, but are you both actually walking the walk, actually going to Mass, that kind of thing? Or maybe you're not both Catholic, but is there enough overlap? That's a whole other topic to get into, whether you should even be dating someone who's not the same faith. But you have to have some compatibility in those areas. And then I think major things like, can you just communicate well with this person? Are they basically respectful of your dignity? They're not abusive. There's no, big red flags, no major addictions and things like that, that it could just really get in the way of the ability to build a relationship. So those are some examples of the really big, important things that those should be standards. But notice that you can't just know all of that about a person the first time you meet them. You kind of have to get to know somebody a little bit to even see if they align with those standards. So usually, I think we tend to use a bunch of preferences as sort of proxies almost for those standards, or things on a list that we're using as a shield, as you put it earlier, to try to kind of keep ourselves safe from even getting involved with someone who might not meet the standards. And that just doesn't necessarily work. So sometimes we might think if a person, goes to a certain parish or dresses in a certain way or something like that, that that's maybe somehow a signal for there's something deeper here that I'm looking for. And it's not necessarily conscious, right? Like, I had a long list of preferences for my future husband, some of which I knew were just preferences, and others I really thought were really, really important. You know, there can be important preferences. You don't have to totally ignore those things. But I do encourage people to kind of set them aside a little bit and be open to the people God is actually placing in your life and just getting to know those real people instead of being so focused on your list. And then your list should actually be kind of formed over time by seeing how you interact with different people and who actually brings out the best in you or who actually makes you the happiest. It might be someone you don't expect. And so be relaxed on the preferences, open your mind as much as possible in that regard. Again, defaulting to yes, just, okay, I'll get to know this person a little bit. And then kind of reflecting after the fact and thinking, okay, how much do I know about this person? Does it look like he or she is aligning with those important standards, or is there something really at odds here? And maybe then considering your most important preferences. I like to tell people to kind of challenge themselves, if you're having trouble with this, to write a list of your husband or wife qualities, but limit yourself to only 5 things on it. Not because you can't have more preferences than that, but it just sort of forces you to think about what's most important. Right. And I would say probably the first 3 or 4 of those should be standards. And then you could have maybe 1 or 2 of your most important preferences
qualities
on there. You know?
Yeah, right.
And that's kind of what your bare minimum is for, okay, I'm going to continue dating this person and see if it works out. Because those should be things you can kind of start to see in that early stage of the relationship. And then, you know, it still may not work out, but that's kind of the...
Yeah.
I think the mindset. There's things that are really most important, and then there's things that, no matter how important it seems right now, might not be in the long term. And God can surprise you, and you're going to be so much happier with someone that you didn't expect. That's definitely the case for me.
Oh my gosh, totally the same for me. And to that point too, the person that you're looking for that has all the things that you really want might not be the person that you need.
Yes.
Like,
I
am a pretty laid back person, and I kind of thought I would always be with like a really chill guy. And my husband is a pretty intense person. and I didn't know that I would really grow to appreciate and love how direct and passionate and driven and all of these different qualities that I didn't necessarily prioritize. I didn't know how much I would value that, especially in a husband and as a leader of my family now. And I didn't gravitate toward men like that necessarily before him. But that was what I needed. And we balanced each other out in that way so well. And I could have never guessed that until we started getting to know each other. And I found that really attractive. God puts the person you need in your life, not the person you necessarily think that you need or want always. Yes. So
that's very similar for me too, with just very different personality and even different looks than I thought I wanted. But I want to emphasize, because I think sometimes people misunderstand this, that it doesn't mean you're sort of forcing yourself to marry someone that you know is good for you, even though you don't really want to. Not at all. The truth is that oftentimes we actually do genuinely fall in love with someone that isn't what we originally expected. And it can take a little bit of time, but then it happens. And then you're really genuinely very happy.
Make
sure that's clear.
Definitely. We're not saying settle for someone you don't feel passionately about. But you can be very surprised by what you end up, right, like you said, falling in love with. So I agree completely. Okay, let's talk about finding these people, finding these good Catholic people. You mentioned trying to shift from online dating and meeting people online to in-person events. How can people change their approach to that if they're really like on the apps? Are there benefits to the apps? Like, what is your view on all of that? How do people meet people?
Yeah. So I think the apps can be a really good tool. I just think they should not be anyone's only tool. So a lot of people, especially I think in the kind of 25-ish and under crowd now, their first thought when they're thinking about dating is to go get on an app. And that's okay, but I think it should just be something you use a little bit each day. Maybe, you know, you check it, see if you have messages, whatever, but don't go over the top with it. And then make sure you are also getting out in person and just try both, you know? Some people are in an area where there's not a lot of events and things they can go to very easily. Maybe they're a perfect fit for online dating. Other people, it just messes with their heads. I never thought I would be a good fit for it. I never ended up doing it. I interviewed a lot of people who were successful with it, though, for the book. So there's a good chapter on that in there. But I think it's important to just see that as, okay, it's one more way that you're just connecting with someone you wouldn't have met otherwise. And then you're trying to bring that relationship in person as quickly as possible anyway. And then I do highly recommend that people get out to, I mean, anything that you're genuinely interested in, but especially those things that would put you in the path of other single people or in your age group, especially Catholics, Christians, although sometimes you can be surprised where you meet them. I know a couple who literally met in a grocery store parking lot.
Wow.
Yes. Yep. So, and they're married now. He wasn't originally Catholic. He was Christian of some sort, Protestant.
Okay.
But he ended up converting just over the course of the relationship. I think it was genuine and they're
That's
married.
Beautiful.
And,
wow.
Yeah, it worked out great. So you never know. I've run into a lot of Catholics at anything related to dancing, like salsa dancing, ballroom dancing, swing dancing, that type of
line
thing.
Dancing.
Line dancing. Yeah. Super popular among Catholics in my area. So yeah, I don't know. It's making a big comeback, but yeah. So I think getting out to those things, you know, I tell guys this especially, learn to dance. Women love it. Women absolutely love a guy who you don't have to be super good at it, just a guy who's willing to get out on the dance floor and do a basic waltz or something. Oh, swoon. So romantic.
Be a little bit confident about it. Like,
yeah. Yes, like even just act confident. Even if
act confident, you know, have your two moves and that's totally fine. They'll be impressed.
One little spin and she's like, oh, he can dance. It's amazing.
Wow.
Those things are great. Good place to just happen to meet people who might be Catholic. But then also, of course, all those parish things. If there's a young adult group that's doing volunteer work or Bible study or whatever, get involved, give it a try. I'm also a big fan of purpose-built singles events, which I think there's kind of a shortage of in Catholicism. I think there's kind of this culture of like, we have young adult events, which might include people who are already seriously dating, engaged, married, discerning priesthood, whatever, like kind of a whole combination of everybody.
Just
which
the age
really,
group.
Really good. Yeah, it's roughly, you know, 20 to 35 or 40, whatever it is. But I think if you're going to a place that is kind of labeled as, this is for single people to kind of mingle and meet each other, it just gives everyone complete permission to be there to try to meet someone of the opposite sex and get a date. You know, it's like a dating app in real life, you know, that's all there is to it. So over here in Nashville, I started a few years ago an initiative to run just, you know, happy hours and speed dating was really popular, probably the most popular one, just events for singles. And it worked out really well, actually way better than I thought it would. That speed dating event that kind of prompted me to give my husband a chance was our first one. I was trying to run it and involved all at once, which is, I don't actually recommend that. Have somebody else run it for you. But
have a married person or someone who's not interested in participating.
Too much to be thinking, oh, I got to stop the timer and tell everybody to change
right.
You know, to the next person, whatever, but also be in the conversation. But
hold that thought. I'm going to go ring the bell.
Worked for me, but it was hard. But things like that can be really, really good. If there's a way to just have like a singles dance or a, you know, speed dating event once in a while, If that's happening in your area, definitely go to it. No matter how awkward it sounds, the worst thing that can happen is that you'll have a funny, awkward story to tell later. And the best thing that could happen is you might meet your future spouse. So what's the trade-off, you know?
Right.
Nothing to lose, nothing to lose. It might just be, you know, a little strange, you know, for one evening.
Yeah.
And then if it's not happening, consider whether you're called to start it. I was not someone who naturally felt like a leader or felt like I would ever start something like that. But God made it really clear that I should just try one event.
Nice.
And then that worked out pretty well. So I tried another and I tried another. And then I handed it off to someone else when I wasn't in it for myself anymore. And you know, she ran with it and made it even better and then handed it off to someone else. You know, it's like the leaders were getting paired off, which that's really the secret, I think. Strategy is like start the singles events and then everyone moves to the single and has a way to get through and an excuse to, you know. I got asked out via the ministry email several times. It's all good, you know. So I think that's good. Like try everything until it doesn't seem to be a good fit. You know, prove to yourself at least that it's not going to work for you before dismissing it. And yeah, that's part of just that openness to God's surprises. It's not just who should I date, it's where might I even meet this person. I once dated this guy that I had met on the steps of my church right after daily mass, like perfect Catholic meet cute, and it didn't work out, you know. And then my husband, I actually met him at a birthday party initially, and then we re-met through all these other things before we started dating, you know. So it wasn't quite the thing I pictured, but it turned out
totally
really.
yeah I love it. That's awesome. And another thing too I was thinking about as you were talking, when you're going to these events, even if you're thinking like, okay, I'm probably not going to meet anyone, but I'm going to go for it and I'm going to talk to as many people as I can. Another benefit to this is you're going to be meeting other men or women who are also single, in your same stage of life. And you might make some really good friends that you can then like go do something else that's more your speed. You know, if you don't love the speed dating event, invite a few people from the speed dating event to go to the bar and grab a beer. Like, it's meeting more people, and meeting people will introduce you to more people. And just these opportunities of community are super important for just broadening your scope. Learning more of what you want when you're trying to find someone.
And just living a good, happy life in the meantime, too.
Totally.
It's never
not
good
being
to just
miserable.
Be sitting alone in your apartment, scrolling the social media and dating apps all the time and just feeling down about yourself, you know? It's good to just, to get involved in anything you're interested in so you just have stuff to do and you're meeting people along the way. And you can have that mindset of, I'm going to challenge myself to talk to someone I've never talked to before, preferably someone who's single and of the opposite sex. if you meet, your next wing woman, wing man, who can then go to the next event with you and be like, all right, we're challenging each other. We're going to report back to how many people did we meet and did we actually, you know, have a good conversation with someone. That can be your first goal before thinking, I have to get a date. Otherwise, this event was a failure.
Exactly. That's so true. I love it. That's great. So, okay. So let's say someone has met that person. They get invited on a date. They're excited. They're preparing to go. You talk about stopping to conduct spouse interviews on dates. What does that mean? How can we avoid treating dating like an interview process and just quickly moving on to the next candidate? Expand on that from your point of view.
Sure. No spouse interviews. It can be a little hard to describe unless you've actually experienced it. I run into people who don't have this attitude and don't necessarily know what I'm talking about, and then people who totally do. But it's this mindset that I think sometimes Catholics get into because we've been told over and over, date intentionally. You're dating for marriage. It's not just for fun. Take this seriously. And that is really well-intentioned advice, and there's some truth to it. I'm not totally dismissing it. You know, the ultimate goal of dating is definitely marriage. It is that is ultimately a serious thing. But I think sometimes people hear that, and there's this abundance of caution about getting emotionally involved with someone that you might not end up marrying, and thinking that heartbreak is the worst possible thing that could ever happen to you or the other person, or that everything about dating, once you feel the lovey-dovey feelings, that it's somehow really dangerous. And so sometimes I think it comes from a certain scrupulosity, or just really trying to do things right and trying to, follow the rules. And so sometimes people are going into dates thinking, or even just those first few messages on the app before deciding to meet up, you're sort of testing the water, thinking, is it worth it to go on a date with this person? Or is it worth it to go on a second date with this person? And so there's this attitude of like, I just got to ask all the important questions kind of as quickly as I can and suss out whether this person is in agreement with me on all these different issues that are kind of heavy. And
Which is really awkward when you think about it.
Yes. If that's how every date is going to be, no wonder people get burned out.
Oh my gosh. And feel like they don't want to date. That's so exhausting. Like, yes, you're not getting to know each other. You're like grilling each other on.
And if you're the less assertive person in the situation, you might just be the one being grilled and you feel like, I'm being interviewed on every date and it's really exhausting and I'm afraid that I'm going to make a bad impression and I have to be really, you know, on my best behavior. And then you're not really being yourself either and you can't relax and you're no fun to be with.
Yeah.
And so both people end up actually putting their worst foot forward, I think, when that happens. And it's just not a very human way to relate, you know? Most people don't enjoy job interviews. So, of course, they're not enjoying dating if this is how it goes. So instead of just coming in with all your questions ready, I think it's better to think of just sort of get-to-know-you questions, sort of icebreaker questions. Ask somebody, what do you enjoy doing for fun? What do you, do you have pets? Do you, do you like that ice cream or cake better? I don't know. Just anything that's sort of lighthearted is actually a really good starting point, because then you're relaxed. You're actually getting to know the other person's personality, and you can save the heavier political and religious stuff and the questions about how many kids do you want and how soon would you want to get married and all that kind of thing for a little bit later. And it's not going to hurt anyone. It's okay to go on 3-5 dates, however many dates, and then it doesn't work out. And you just move on. And it might be painful and disappointing, or it might not be, depending on just kind of how you navigated things. But it's okay. It's okay if you or the other person gets a little disappointed. That's just part of life. You're not going to be able to prevent that by asking all the right questions on the first date anyway. So it's okay to relax a little bit. I think it is good to check in on some of those major standards that we talked about earlier, pretty early on. I have a friend who has just, been dating for a really long time and kind of learned a lot of things by experience. And she always says it's a good idea to sort of check in by about the fourth date. Is somebody looking ultimately for marriage and children and, aligned with you on those things? You can still do that in kind of a gentler way that doesn't feel like an interview. So you can just say something like, if you find the right person, are you hoping to get married? Is that important to you? It doesn't have to be when do you want to get married?
Will you marry me in like...
Right. Yeah, definitely don't accidentally propose. Yeah. Oh, man. I know I've met a man who accidentally proposed to someone, like literally accidentally got engaged, which is
wild. My gosh.
Yeah, because he said something like, would you marry me? Like, meaning like hypothetically, but she just took it as a proposal. Anyway, yeah, be careful. Be careful with your words. It's not giving the wrong impression.
And he didn't tell her, wait, I wasn't.
Nope. He went through with getting her ring. It ultimately didn't work out. So clearly there were communication issues.
Okay, sure. That's a pretty big, one. Yeah,
like that sounds like fiction, but it's true.
That is very funny.
Yeah. You can check in on that gently. You can just say something, are you excited to be a parent someday? Is that something you're looking forward to? And I think oftentimes people will mention those things naturally without even having to be asked.
They come
if it's really important, then you happen to say like, I'm so excited to be a dad one day or whatever. And so it can come up a little bit more naturally instead of being something you have to force. And similar with the big things that people tend to disagree on, even within Catholicism, you don't have to force it right up front. It can sort of come out naturally over time, and that's okay. And in the meantime, try to enjoy your conversation and just think, who is this person? Let me just see who this person is first before seeing if they're a person who could serve the role of being my spouse. You know, you're not the boss, so you're not interviewing someone for the position of spouse. You're both getting to know each other. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. That's very helpful. I think that will help a lot of people, just that advice overall.
It's a way of sort of objectifying someone, I think. Sometimes it
definitely
can be. We think of objectification as being looking at someone's physical body in a certain way as an object for pleasure, but it can also be looking at someone as just, how can this person serve me or you know, serve my vocation, which sounds really noble. I think it's a sneaky way of kind of objectifying someone sometimes. Instead of just saying we're equals, we're just two human beings just relating to each other, kind of as friends initially, but as friends who are considering whether there might be more here, and then just saying thank you for your time and moving on. If it doesn't align, that's okay.
Yeah, I agree. I think that those initial dates and getting to know each other phase should be kind of a time of like admiration from a distance.
Oh, I love that word. Yes.
Like, wow, she's really kind. Wow, he was so respectful to the waiter or waitress. Mm-hmm. Like, just kind of like a general looking at a person and saying, like, that's really interesting. Like, I'm noticing something about you, versus being like, she's kind, she'll be a great wife one day. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just admire this person who is a daughter or son of God for who they are. And eventually you will think about, okay, these are qualities that I really want in a spouse, but I wouldn't go into it thinking, will this person be the best husband or wife? You know,
because again, you can't know that right away. But what you're saying brings up another really good point, which is no matter how many questions you ask and no matter how perfectly this person answers, you don't really know what someone's like until you just observe them over time. So admiring those good qualities when you see them and then just seeing this person in different situations is actually going to help you get to know them better, I think, than just an interview process. So, and I love that word admiration. I'm a nerd and I took Latin in high school and so in college. So admirando, it's the Latin roots that are wondering at, like having awe.
I love that.
Yeah. Awe and wonder. So you're looking at someone going, wow, what a wonderful person God has created here.
Yeah. You know? And I get to spend time with them.
Yes. It's a privilege and an honor to spend time with another image of God.
Yeah.
And just
absolutely.
See God's handiwork. Even if it's so one date and then you just go on, you know, there's something practical that has to come in at some point, but it's okay to just say, oh, what an honor to spend time with you and come into it with that humble attitude. I love that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Oh my gosh. I feel like we like hit something there. That was really good. Okay, so we have our different like styles of Catholicism and our different like tribes, if you will. So there's like the more traditional, more charismatic, daily mass goers, Sunday mass goers. There's all these different variations of how to live out the Catholic faith. And when dating, I think, like you kind of mentioned earlier, you might think this person goes to this parish, so they're going to be good because I know the qualities of a person who goes to this parish. But how can we kind of approach each other's different tribes when we're dating, or even dating a non-Catholic? How can we approach someone who's different in their approach to how they love God and how they worship God? How do we approach them with charity and respect and also clarity of, is this something that we can make work? Are we compatible, or is this too big of a difference?
It's hard because it's so different in different situations. I don't think there's one perfect formula. But what I usually encourage is the bigger the faith difference is, just the slower you probably need to take it. Just ease into dating. So if you happen to meet someone who's not Catholic, but they are a Christian, and you seem to align on some kind of basic values, I don't think it's a bad idea to just go on a date and feel it out and then go on another date, you know, just take it very slowly, step by step, because I've seen plenty of relationships where people did that. And the Catholic person was really strong in their faith, constantly learning open to discussing it, open to sharing their knowledge and sharing their, you know, love for the sacraments and whatever it was that was different, but not pressuring the other person. And then the other person ended up just coming to see the beauty of the church and the fullness of the faith and embracing that. And so God can bring a beautiful conversion out of that, and that might be his will. But I think at the same time, there's a fine line between that and the sort of flirt to convert mentality or evangelizing, whatever you want to call it, where you're like, oh, this person's great, so I'm going to make them Catholic.
Yeah.
And, you know. Right. So you have to approach it gently and just check in with yourself. Maybe have one, you know, close friend or family member who you are committed to being 100% honest with about everything that's going on in that relationship, how your faith life is doing. Have a spiritual director if you can, but even if you can't, at least just a friend who's really solid in the faith, so that as you're getting deeper in that relationship, you're checking in with God and you're talking to that person, and they can objectively tell you, you know, are you still making it to Mass? Have you been to confession lately? Are you slipping on any of these things that are really important? Because if that person's dragging you away from God and the true church, they are not for you.
Definitely.
That is not a good relationship. So you have to be firm in that and be really objective about it. But there are situations where they're not pulling you away from God, and maybe they're actually bringing you closer to God in a way that you didn't expect, even though they don't necessarily share the whole faith. So something to approach with caution, but I would not recommend going out of your way to try to date someone who's not Catholic, because I just think that it's relatively rare that that works out. You know, if God really wants that, I think he'll kind of bring them into your life naturally, but you shouldn't necessarily be seeking that, because it is just fraught with more, you know, big heavy discussions and more potential temptations and just more things that you might disagree on that could be really rocky down the road. If you're both Catholic and you're within the umbrella of what the church officially allows and teaches, then I think you're in much safer territory. I think then I would encourage people to be maybe more open than they think they need to be, because I like to just use myself as an example here to show that I've, you know, I learned a lot of these things the hard way. I tend toward the traditional leaning direction with, you know, liturgy and kind of my interpretation of things, but I spent some time where I really felt like I have to not only meet a good Catholic guy, I have to meet a Catholic guy who is the exact same tribe or flavor of Catholicism as me, and, you know, all these other criteria. And so I was really, really limiting myself to, you know, the five guys at my parish that I had already dated or whatever. You know, there was not a big pool. That's a slight
exaggeration. Not a huge really, pool.
It was not a big
pool. You're like, pool, everyone's
and I didn't
want to
go online. So, right. And I've run into people who like had a similar mindset of like, I want a really traditional Catholic. So they were willing to go long distance online to find someone. But that didn't seem like a good fit for me either for various reasons. So it was sort of, it was just very, very limiting. And it's already relatively rare to meet someone who is actually a practicing Catholic and, you know, you're basically attracted to and all those other basic things, that if you're further limiting that, it's just the numbers are not in your favor. And men and women tend to congregate at different tribes from what I can tell. Like the traditional world leans
masculine.
Male.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you're a man in that world and you're like, I have to find a Catholic woman who already goes to Latin Mass all the time and like is exactly the same as me on this, there just aren't very many of those, unfortunately, who are still single. So you might have to branch out. So I think it's a good idea to, you know, potentially be open to attending different masses and liturgies as long as they're all like fully church approved. But even if you're not willing to do that, if that's just not, you know, in your comfort zone, I guess, then just other events that aren't really focused on specific, you know, liturgies or doctrines, where you can just meet people who are basically serious Catholics, you know, but yeah, they're practicing their faith. And again, the most important thing really is something you can't know right out the gate, which is, does this person truly desire to be a saint? Does this person really want heaven more than anything else? Does this person really pursue truth? Because if you have that, then hopefully, you know, both of you are just getting closer and closer to God, which means you're getting closer to each other. You're converging on the same point, whatever that may be. And God may genuinely lead people in, you know, different paths, different directions within the faith. That's fine. You don't have to share all the same devotions, but you should probably have enough in common by the time you get married that you can agree on what Mass you're going to, you know, take your children to on Sunday. And are you going to do a family rosary or something else, whatever. So, you know, but you can sort of take time to figure out those details rather than, you know, check all these boxes from the beginning. So kind of similar to those standards and preferences. You should look for someone who's genuinely striving for sanctity. And you should be doing the same yourself, you know, and be honest with yourself. Like, am I just kind of stuck in a rut? Or is this actually where God is leading me with this devotion or this flavor of Catholicism? And then just take it step by step. Yeah, see whether you align over time.
Yeah, for sure. And I think just giving each other the benefit of the doubt. Like, I was pretty much went to Novus Ordo, you know, my whole childhood, but I was confirmed Maronite Catholic. And so that's a completely different liturgy that I love. It's a really special part of who I am that my husband had never, you know, known before, which is of no fault of his own. He's not Lebanese, so I wouldn't expect him to. But when I brought him to a Maronite Mass, he was like, again, admiring and in amazement of these totally different customs and the readings and the Eucharistic prayer in Aramaic, you know, the way Jesus probably would have said it. It's, you know, there's all of these really rich aspects of different parts of Catholicism and different liturgies. And I think just allowing someone to have not experienced the one that you love yet and bringing them into it if you like them. So if you're a traditional Latin Mass person and you love the traditional Latin Mass, which is incredibly beautiful, someone you like or you meet in an event might not have ever gone to TLM. So just be open to the fact that not everyone has experienced all the same faith experiences you have, and just approach it from a place of sharing rather than judgment is what I would say.
Yes, exactly. Being willing to share why this is important to you or what led you to it, and instead of measuring, is this person good enough, just saying, would you like, you know, invitation. Would you like to learn more about this? Would you like to? That works for the faith as a whole or for anything specific within it. Like, you know, and I think, there was more than once in the past, I think, that I had maybe started talking to a guy or gone on, you know, a date or two, and they were kind of like, well, I've been meaning to check out a traditional Latin Mass. Maybe I'll do that this Sunday, you know. And then maybe it clicked with them or maybe it didn't, you know.
Saying like, that's a deal breaker if you've never been to traditional Latin Mass or whatever the variation is.
I encourage people too, a lot of people our age who are, you know, traditional Latin Mass goers or whatever it may be, didn't grow up that way. You know, you were introduced to it at some point because that's not the norm. And so, same with, to this day, I've never been to a charismatic mass, but I know they exist, you know, so, and I know that like the church has given permission for this and it's, you know, it's a thing. So somebody would have to really, someone I care about would have to really get me interested and say, I know where one is happening. Would you like to check it out with me? You know, and it would be a big step for me to experience that, you know. I think that's, invitation and just sharing kind of, again, the way you might with a new acquaintance or friend instead of out the gate going, oh, no, this isn't going to work out. We're too different.
Just saying, this is something I love. You might love it too, you know. So, okay, so this is this next question, such a tricky one for a lot of people, physical affection. So, like you said, there's so much gray area here. We know we're not supposed to have sex before marriage, but what about everything else? You know, all of the physical things can be really, really tricky. So what is your advice for the couple or the person who's dating, who's trying to be really chaste, but also be affectionate and not like puritanical, I guess would be my word.
This chapter of the book, it's chapter 9 in Pretty Good Catholic. It is the one I definitely worked the hardest on, prayed the most over, because this is the area where I felt like the advice out there was the most contradictory with each other and the most lacking overall. So I really wanted to get it right. And I have been told by a number of people that it really helped them. So there are people who are already seriously dating someone, maybe even engaged, and they'll grab the book and they're like, ooh, I opened straight to chapter 9.
This is what we need help with.
Yeah, it's called When Should We Kiss? So it kind of grabs your eyes. Like,
I love that.
Yeah. And yeah, I get pretty deep and detailed and kind of vulnerable in that chapter about my own experiences. Probably not enough time for all of it here, but the basic thing that I like to say, yes, just a little plug. Not just because I want to make sales. I promise, like, if I can say so myself, it's a good chapter. It's worth it. But it's, yeah, the basics are, number one, yes, we shouldn't be fornicating, you know, not having sex before marriage. Scripture and church teaching also make it really clear that we're not supposed to lust after someone in our hearts. That's something Jesus says right in the gospel. If you lust after someone, it's as if you committed adultery. So we know that from the teaching of the church, and St. John Paul II talks a lot about this. Lust is looking at someone as sort of an object for our own pleasure. It's maybe fantasizing about what you would like to do with them, you know, right, in your right. mind, even if you're not acting out on it, you know. And so we know we're not supposed to purposely be doing that. Just because a thought flashes across your mind doesn't mean you've already sinned mortally. It's just a temptation. But if you're consenting to that and taking it further and dwelling on it, you know, purposely encouraging that, that's a problem. So it's, there is no church teaching that specifically says, this is what type or amount of kissing is okay, or this is when it's okay to hold hands, or, you know, nothing like that, because that is somewhat case by case or culturally dependent and person dependent. What we're called to do is sort of be prudent and be honest with ourselves about what's going on in our minds and hearts. Some cultures and some families are just a lot more touchy, feely, affectionate. And so maybe for those people, like, kissing pretty early in a relationship just doesn't feel particularly sexual. It's not a temptation. For other people, it might be a really big temptation. And so that's why the church doesn't have a really hard and fast rule. And so I'm not going to be able to give anybody a really hard and fast rule,
even though
someone's been looking for that, because it makes it easier.
Tell me what to do.
So the basic principle, you know, don't be lusting after someone in your heart. And if you're kissing or whatever in a way that is encouraging arousal, basically, which could be a temptation to those lustful thoughts and feelings, then that's not good. And so you need to sort of stop yourself a step before you get to that point. And I think another principle that's just really helpful, again, this is St. John Paul II. He says it in a probably much more philosophical and fancy way. I have a hard time, honestly, reading his writings. I have to read like a summary of the summary.
I'm with you.
Edward Sree is good. You know, check out the other people who summarize him. But the principle I love that he articulates is that physical affection should be an expression of an existing relationship, not the cause of your attachment. So it's a language, it's an expression. Yeah, it's the expression of something that is already there. So if you already have a relationship on the intellectual and spiritual and emotional levels, and then you're expressing that with a physical gesture, that is an appropriate use of physical affection. If you are meeting someone pretty much for the first time or don't know them very well, and then you're just making out because it feels really good to make out, then even if you're not going to go any further and you're not going to have sex, even if you're, you know, whatever, then you're still kind of, it's just not an appropriate use of physical affection. I would say even if you're not full on making out, but just like a kiss on the lips is pretty intimate. And if you've just met someone, you're like, what are you expressing? What are you saying with that kiss? You're kind of saying, I love you, even if that's not necessarily true because you don't know them well enough. So it's kind of a judgment call, but I think it's good to enter dating with just a mindset that you're going to take a physical affection pretty slowly in general. Think about where you actually are in the relationship. Different things might be appropriate at different stages for chastity reasons and just for clear-headed discernment. You know, kissing can really, as one of my friends put it, make you love drunk. So you get really kind of addicted to those feelings, you know, the oxytocin and everything. And it can be really hard to discern clearly. I definitely had that experience with one relationship, and it made the breakup just so much more devastating than it otherwise would have been. in a way that just wasn't really necessary. And it meant that we hadn't talked about lots of really important things, and I wasn't seeing the relationship objectively anymore and seeing that this wasn't going to work out. So just think about, you know, if you're in that early stage where you're just kind of going on a couple dates, maybe you're not even exclusive yet, you know, then maybe just a brief hug is all you need to do there. If that, some people aren't even comfortable with that, that's fine.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
later on, maybe holding hands as you walk along is, it's a beautiful, sweet gesture that doesn't have to be,
that
you know,
clearly is
at
not
all.
Like yeah. sexualized. It's just like a,
right,
hey, I'm
right.
here.
It's just like, oh, we're, you know,
we're doing something
we like
together.
Yeah,
yeah,
we
right.
like each other. This is great. And then as that's you get true. Deeper and closer, you're starting to consider, are we going to get married? Maybe we're going to become family. Then think about the gestures you would do
for
with
sure.
your family, you know, like
yeah,
more hugging, kissing on the cheek, like all those things are really good. Sometimes we skip past all of those other really sweet things and go straight to the really romantic kiss. And again, might not be sinful, but it just might not be a great idea either. But I also don't think you have to like save kissing for marriage. Some people choose to, and that's fine. Sometimes that works out well for them. But I think if that's the case, you need to just make sure you're not doing it out of like over scrupulosity or fear either, you know, like you need some physical affection before you get married to someone.
And you need to be attracted for sure. Like
yes,
you should.
Yes. If you're not kissing
because
you're grossed out by the idea, then there's something
that's not
going
a good
on,
idea. That's not a good sign.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You should want to kiss this person.
For sure.
Sure.
Yes.
My husband and I did decide to, at my request, save kissing on the lips until we got engaged. Not because I think everybody has to, but because for me, I had realized in the past that kissing before that had kind of messed with my discernment too much. So I just decided that's the line for me. He very kindly respected that and, you know, agreed to it. And then it was so beautiful to have that first kiss when he had just proposed. And,
that
you know, it was
so
a very
sweet.
Sweet moment. And it didn't lead to any kind of temptations because, you know, we had sort of built the right relationship in the right order, I think, so that that was just an expression of where we were and
that's
a good
beautiful.
Sort of marker of this new stage. So I really enjoyed doing that. I think it was really good for us. So I just put it out there as something you can think about doing for yourself. Think about whether that's a good option. But even if you want to kiss before that, maybe, you know, maybe not on the first date, unless you're, you know, for whatever reason, you knew that person really, really well before going on a date, then maybe it is fine. But yeah, just thinking about that is this is something that should follow the other aspects of the relationship rather than take the lead.
Right, right. That's so sweet. I love that. Oh gosh, I had a thought. Oh yeah. So I was thinking while you were talking and putting things in their proper order and how special it was for you guys to wait to kiss until engagement, with, you know, waiting to have sex until marriage. I think having now been married almost 3 years, I think that was also such a good preparation for marriage in that there are seasons of abstinence in marriage. So I think it's really important to learn how to have that self-control and learn how to have that just understanding of the sacredness of sex and how it's not for all the time. It's not for anyone to do together. It's for a man and wife to do it once they're married and to do it at the appropriate times once they're married too. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So I just think any act of discipline and self-control that feels really, really hard when you're dating will lead to great fruits in your marriage mm-hmm. because you just don't know what things are going to look like. You might have to do NFP for a while. You might have health issues and have to abstain for that reason. You just don't know. So it's, even if it feels really challenging, temperance and just having a really full understanding of the physical affection you're getting into is a very valuable skill to have as you enter into this vocation. So
yes, yes. Yeah. And you need to, I think, also be capable of being affectionate with your spouse, even in a time
right.
that you are abstaining.
Being intimate without having sex
yeah,
is
so
how
building all those other
yeah.
languages of love
yeah.
are really important. So you have that practice. Yeah.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, so we ask this for most all of our guests, but for that single person listening to this who is so tired and so hopeless and just feeling really stuck in being single and they don't think it's ever going to change, what is the message from your book and just from your personal life that you hope that they take to heart the most?
It's going to sound kind of cliche, but I would just say there is still hope. There is always hope, you know. It can be so easy to just despair. I went through times in my singleness where I was having to really confront the reality that I might never be married. And even though that was what I always wanted, and that is something I think every single person will have to just confront and kind of come to terms with, because sometimes that does happen. And if you absolutely need marriage or relationship in order to just feel like a real person or you know, be basically happy or be close to God, then that's not good. You know, there's something that needs to be worked on there. At the same time, though, I don't want to dismiss that desire in anyone, because I think that desire is really good. And if that deep desire for marriage is leading you to continue, you know, exploring what does God want me to do next and take action, then that's a good thing. So I think oftentimes God is going to do a lot to lead the right person into your life, but he also needs your cooperation. So keeping that hope enough to take those little risks, you know, go to that singles event, even though it sounds awkward, or, you know, try a dating app, pray about it and see if, you know, you're supposed to try a dating app, even though you haven't yet, or should you just say yes to a date with this person who seems really interested, even though he or she might not be, you know, what you had in mind, whatever it is, those little risks that are actually safe. You need to take that action. And then at the same time, sort of be detached too, which is really hard, but kind of let go and let God do his work as well. So it's this cooperation between the two, and continue just building up your own relationship with God and using the single time well, so that you can be content for as long as you need to be in this single state, or as content as possible while still having that desire. It's hard to strike the balance, but I think I run into so many couples who got married later in life than they thought they would, or married someone that, you know, they didn't expect, and none of them would change anything looking back on it. No matter how long it takes, even if it feels like you're just waiting and waiting forever and trying everything and it's not working, when you do marry that person that's right for you at the time that's right, it's all worth it. It's all redeemed. I'll just share a very quick story. When I was fresh out of college, I prayed a novena to Our Lady on Doer of Knots. It was August of 2017. And she's known for, you know, that title of Our Lady is known for resolving, they call them small problems, but those small problems that feel big, and especially relationship things. And so my main intention was, all right, my vocation, my future husband, like, what's the next step here? And halfway through that novena, I met this guy, you know, at church. Everything seemed great. I was like, great. Answer to prayer. Perfect. The novena worked. We broke up like 5 months later. You know, it was absolutely devastating. And I thought, I felt tricked. I felt betrayed by God, because like, you gave me this answer to prayer and then you took him away again. What in the world? But over time, eventually, I mean, it was a long journey, but I healed. Luckily, I did not just turn my back on God. You know, hold on to God no matter what. He's not tricking you. There's a plan, you know. And, you know, went through other relationships and various things, discerned being a nun for a while, you know, all these different things for years, and kind of forgot about that whole novena thing. And then once I was already engaged to my husband, we were just chatting about it. And I jokingly was like, yeah, you know, when I was 22, I wanted to get married at 22, but I'm glad I didn't, because I wouldn't have married you. And, you know, what were you up to in, you know, 2017 before we met? And he was like, well, it depends if you're talking about before August or after August. I see your eyebrows going up. Yeah.
I know. I'm like, where is this?
I was like, wait a minute. So I knew that my now husband had grown up Catholic until his teens, and then had fallen away from the church and been kind of nothing. And then he went through kind of a Protestant phase and then eventually came back to Catholicism. I knew all of that at a basic level, but I didn't know the exact timeline of how it all happened. And just, again, we were already engaged. We already had made our decision. But in this conversation, we learned that exactly during the novena that I prayed, he was on this trip to Europe with some friends who were Christian. And that trip basically prompted him to stop just kind of being agnostic and start exploring Christianity again. And so that was the beginning of his journey back to the faith.
Oh my gosh. Whoa.
Yeah. So the novena was, the prayer was answered.
It was working.
Yes. Exactly. But it took me, I guess, 6 years to see the fruit. So hold on to hope, you know, pray those novenas and get out there and meet more people and, you know, do everything that God is leading you to do and, you know, enjoy your single time, do all of it. But just, you know, you never know what God is doing in the background. And once you meet the right person, it can all go so quickly too, because my husband and I, from our first date to getting engaged, was only 7 months. Not everyone is called to move that quickly, but for us, it worked out great. It's just, you know, when you have the right person at the right time, it can go really speedily. And then we got married 7 months after that. And then we had a baby almost right away. And, you know, here we are 3 years ago. Yes. Yeah. 3 years ago, as we're recording this, I was in the depths of despair because I was still single. I had been through so many breakups, was just so sick of it. Nothing was working. And then actually, I had already met my future husband. I just didn't know because I had shut him down. And, you know, we hadn't done the speed dating event yet. So now, 3 years later, all my dreams have come true. I like to say that because I always wanted to be married and be a mom and write a book. And I've done all three now.
My gosh, so, you can retire.
Yeah, like, I can just retire now, you know. We want more kids. We want all kinds of things.
Of course. It's only the beginning of the journey.
Next? I don't know. Second edition of Pretty Good Catholic. But I say that to just encourage people. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You don't know what might have already happened. You just haven't seen the result yet. So keep cooperating with God and keep up hope.
Yeah. Oh, that's an awesome story. Oh my gosh. Beautiful. Okay. So where can people find Pretty Good Catholic? And is there any other project or anything else you want to leave with our listeners?
Sure. PrettyGoodCatholic.com is the best place to go. That has links to buy the book in print, or you can get ebook pretty much anywhere that there are ebooks. I recommend people actually go to their local Catholic bookstore and ask for it. Sometimes they're stocking it or they can get it for you. And we just recently released an audiobook through Audible. So if you'd rather listen than read, that's available. And we will be launching, the publisher and I are working on some other exciting initiatives, hopefully going to be out within the next few weeks here. I don't know how much I'm allowed to say, but basically go to prettygoodcatholic.com and you can even read like a little sample of the book and the table of contents, kind of get your interest piqued.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. And thank you for all your work. You're helping a ton of people. So it's huge.
Thank you again for having me on today.
If you enjoyed this episode of After Cana, share it with a friend, leave a review, or head to the Ferris Love website for more resources on building relationships and